That's a very unique question. I think it's incredibly important. And part of the challenge is I think executives who are relying on marketers want immediate results because we've been trained to live in this world of immediate action. No one wants to wait or be patient. I can do everything I ever wanted to on a phone. In this new world, not everything's always going to be immediate. It's about building relationships. And for some products, it's going to be immediate. And for some products, it's not. If you're in a B2B environment, that could be a long sale. If you're selling a home, you don't typically buy homes every day, right? That's a long tail relationship. In the car industry, anywhere from 3 to 7 years is kind of the typical turn, whether you're on a lease or you're buying. If it's a shirt, well, depends on how often I want to buy a shirt and what demographic I'm in. Some of the other things to think about are where do you have phases that are natural phases and you can move upstream? Take someone selling anything in the kids market. One of my favorite examples, and I wrote a book and I use this one there, is furniture. There's an organization, I bought something, and they still send me the nursery emails. I don't want the nursery emails. They can probably figure out the first time I bought was 10 years ago. That child is no longer in a crib, and I don't have the opportunity to change it. It's either nursery or all kids. There's no in between. I want to give you more data. Please, company, let me give you better data so you can give me more accurate emails. And then what happens? Two things. The flip side to the first party data. Marketers, think about how hard it is for you to get me on your list, to get me to give you data. Then I give it to you. You send me these stinky emails. My option is either unsubscribe from all or keep getting these annoying emails. There hasn't been the right preference center, which is another place for, in my mind, to save the unsubscribe and give you more information. Because I might not want what you're giving me, but I still like you. Just let me decide what it is I want to hear from you.
The smartest marketers from all walks of life, in every industry, talking about the latest trends, opportunities, and challenges. Insights from marketing executives at organizations like National Geographic, IBM, and the Baltimore Ravens. And tips from business authors and experts known around the world. Ways to improve your community's marketing, starting now, right here on the Marketing Smarts Podcast.
Marketing Smarts listeners, imagine a world without cookies. Chocolate chip cookies, macadamia nut cookies. Okay, those probably aren't the cookies that we're talking about. But today we are talking about how marketers can navigate a world minus cookies. And what the heck does that even mean? Of course, today I'm joined with Jody Daniels. We're going to talk about what keeps Jody up at night. We're going to talk about how to get started as B2B marketers in navigating a cookieless world. We're going to talk about hurdles, success, and of course, we'll land the plane somewhere around words of wisdom and what Jody wants to leave us with. Now, a little bit about Jody. Jody Daniels is the founder and CEO of Red Clover Advisors, a privacy consultancy that brings data privacy strategy and compliance together with its flexible and scalable approach that simplifies data privacy, complexity, refines, updates, or builds privacy structure and makes both the business and the legal issue accessible and actionable for all. Jody is a certified informational privacy professional and serves as the outsourced privacy officer for companies. Jody Daniels is a national keynote speaker, co-host of the top-ranked She Said Privacy, He Said Security podcast, co-author of Wall Street Journal and USA Today best-selling book, Data Reimagined, Building Trust One Bite at a Time, and also has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, The Economist, Forbes, Inc., Authority Magazine, Thrive Global, Inc., and more. Jody holds a Master's of Business Administration and a Bachelor of Business Administration from Emory University, Goetze Business School. Holy mackerel, with a guest like that, Jody Daniels, you know there's going to be some nuggets along the way, so get that notepad ready. But before we get into the good stuff, let's hear a word from our sponsor. Are you looking for great curated content specific to you? the B2B marketer? Want to have fun while also learning valuable information to help you succeed on a daily basis? Then you're in luck. Look no further. This week's Marketing Smarts podcast is brought to you by the Marketing Smarts Live Show. That's right, you can join us live every Monday where we shine the spotlight on you, the community members, share fresh B2B news, several top-notch curated articles to help you be a better marketer, and of course, have tons of fun along the way. If you want even more B2B marketing education with the ability to ask questions and engage with the rest of the audience, tune in every Monday at 10 a.m. Eastern for the Marketing Smarts Live Show. You won't regret the additional B2B learning you'll be adding to your life. Now, let's get back to this episode of the Marketing Smarts Podcast. All right, Marketing Smarts listeners, you know what time it is. How you, as a B2B marketer, can navigate a world minus, say it ain't so, cookies. And what the heck does that even mean with Jody Daniels? Ladies and gentlemen, let's get into the good stuff. Marketing Smarts listeners, are you ready to have a conversation about cookies? And are you like me? Every time you hear the word cookies, you think about the Cookie Monster or chocolate chip cookies. Well, that's not the type of cookies we're talking about. But I'm super excited because we have Jody Daniels here today, the expert that we're going to talk about how marketers can navigate a world, oh, and say a sad world minus cookies if it was the oatmeal or peanut butter kind. But we're talking about the internet kind. And what to do to navigate a world minus cookies. Jody, how the heck are you doing today?
I am good. And you've made me really hungry. And I have to say that chocolate chip cookies are literally my favorite food on the planet.
Yeah, cookies should be just like one of the staple food groups. I'll have to write somebody about that. Now, Jody, one of the things I like to do, I like to ask interesting questions in the podcast. And there's a couple that I throw in here just for some effect and see where it goes. And the first one that we'd love to start out with, and again, it could be a dream, it could be a nightmare. But when you think about a world minus cookies, what keeps you up at night?
That's a very interesting question. I think it's around the idea that you have built a massive ecosystem with agencies, ad tech, publishers, advertisers who have all relied on where we are. We're going to talk a little bit about how we got here and why we're moving to the cookie-less universe. I don't want it all to collapse. We would have advertisers who can't reach people with their goods that are important. We might need to buy these things that they've been targeting us for. You have people's jobs that are on the line, livelihoods, companies, dreams that have all been here. And I really actually hope that we can collectively as an industry, and I think everyone listening has a role in this conversation, and I'm glad that you've tuned in, to be able to help make sure that we can navigate effectively to what's next without causing a serious demise.
It's so interesting to hear you go in that direction. And there's two words for some reason just popped out to me. And it was, you said, have relied on. And then you said, have the responsibility to. And I think that's going to be interesting to think about relying on something as you move forward and what that will be. And being responsible in the way that you act or do things and what those things might be as well. But let's back up because we got to kind of have a little bit of a history lesson here. And I'm fearful as a marketer, I might be part of the problem historically. I'm fearful that maybe some of the Marketing Smarts listeners might hear themselves in your answer. But Jody, how the heck did we get here? Why do we need a cookie-less future?
Well, it ties to that word responsibility that I said. And I was one of those people early on who participated in the journey. For anyone listening, you might hear all kinds of experts who come on and talk about privacy. And well, I actually got to privacy from targeted advertising. I stalked you for cars. You're welcome. How we got here is because the little cookie, the little piece of code that has been traveling the internet times thousands of companies who have packaged it all together and shared and sold and then leveraged and used it so that I could be encouraged to buy a new pair of shoes or a package of gluten-free cookies that I just have to have, or the new kitchen light that I didn't buy, but you really want me to have, or I forgot to get it in my shopping cart, please give it to me now. Every time you have some type of tool or technology, people are going to use it for good, and then you're going to have some actors who don't. and they push the envelope too far. And what has happened is we have privacy laws that have arisen. There's been privacy laws for a while, but to help with the modern day GDPR, which actually, while we're recording this, recently celebrated its fifth birthday. Yes, clap, thank you. We should absolutely, we all need to have some cookies in honor of its fifth birthday. Forget those cupcake things, we're doing cookies. But in all seriousness, we had this big law that now said, hold on, let's really understand what is actually happening. And there was no control. There was no ability for the individual to decide what was collected, stop the collection, be informed of the collection. There was no part until really GDPR came on the scene. And since then, there's been a plethora of laws that have really shifted the landscape from a privacy perspective. But the how we got here is because kind of what you learned in kindergarten, few people were the bad actors, and now there's a bunch of rules.
So and first of all, I was not one of those bad actors, so I will be able to sleep tonight. And Marketing Smarts listeners, I'm sure, because you're a listener, you were not one of those folks as well. Here's the thing, what's interesting, when I hear you talk about GDPR, I want to go off the beaten path for a second, because I understand some people understand what that means. There's a lot of people that might not even know what that means. And we're going to dive in a little bit deeper to like some other things as far as like legal acts and all that stuff. But what would you say to the business that goes, wasn't that UK thing?
It was that EU thing that also then had to be copied to be a UK thing, which is then getting updated again because it's actually been 5 years. But it was the first big modern digital, I shouldn't just say digital, because it is actually not only a digital focus law. It is the big modern day privacy law focused on the way the global economy and data is being shared. And while it was passed in the EU, anyone around the globe who was targeting or tracking people based in the EU then had to comply. It made it a global law that everyone, again, had to really be paying attention to, even if you were based in the US and it was overseas. And I used to tell people, if you were a solo blogger with a global audience, congratulations, you still had to pay attention to it. And what I think is unique about that law compared to many of the ones we have in the US is there's no floor. They expect a company to treat each individual with the same amount of respect, whether you're small and a solo blogger, in my example, or large multinational, because in their mind, it's an individual first as opposed to a company first law. I think that's a pretty critical piece to understanding the kind of how we got here, because before it was always based on what was good for the company. And now there's a shift for companies to think about, well, actually, I have to put the person first.
Which, by the way, I love that, not only from a law perspective, but from a marketing and sales strategy of putting the human first in these processes. There's going to be a lot of things that we might bump against, you know, the word trust, Jody, as we continue our conversation down through this. But let's back up a couple other feet, because again, one of the things I try to do is level set to all the different types of listeners so they fully understand, okay, I am prepared to now run with the rest of this session, this podcast, because, yep, okay, we're talking about the same thing. So when you say to navigate a world minus cookies and all the, by the way, cool tactics and strategies you listed about two questions ago, what the heck do you even mean, minus cookies? What does that equal for us?
Well, let's define the cookie. There's a little piece of code that drops on a computer when you go to website ABC. And then there's a couple hundred, a couple thousand, depending on the size of the company, that might kind of keep getting dropped as you continue on that website or a bunch of other websites. And what that means is if I go to the shoe website and I don't buy my shoes, I can now go browse the web, go to my favorite social media platform, and they can serve me up an ad that tries to encourage me to buy those shoes. And then there are also some other cookies along the way to analyze how effective was the ad. Maybe in the car space, I was looking at a blue car, you really want to sell me a silver car, or you really want to make sure I don't get a silver car, you really want me to have a blue car. You want to make sure I don't see five ads all the time. There's a variety of different kinds of cookies. Not all cookies are created equal, and not all cookies are bad. But the general essence of a cookie is some little tracking piece. Now, if I use this analogy, it often helps people understand the tracking piece a little bit more. And as we start to build for trust, we talked about this little digital cookie trail that is created when you're online. Well, imagine you're outside and you're going for a walk. Someone is behind you with a little notepad and they note what you're wearing and they note how far it is from your house to the Starbucks. They note what you're getting at the Starbucks. They note what kind of car you drove. They then know everything else that you're doing. Oh, you're going to go to this office. You're going to order this for lunch. Go to this yoga gym. Play these music stations. Come home. Open your fridge. Have your smart TV. Watch your shows. And we can kind of keep going. After the first 30 seconds you notice this person behind you with your little notebook, you probably would stop and say, what on earth are you doing? I don't want that tracking anymore. But in my example, I followed you the entire day. That is what is happening in the land of cookies. We are following the trail all the time to be able to capture that data to build profiles. I'm a mom in Atlanta. Someone else is a younger demographic in Atlanta. Someone else likes sports. Someone else likes luxury cars. All different kinds of profiles are getting created left and right. Well, in a land minus cookies, I'm not going to be able to build those profiles reliant on somebody else to do that in the same way. In some places, I have to opt in for the tracking and the cookie. A few people might do that. A significant majority might not do that because they don't like the idea of the tracking. They don't want the person behind them writing everything down, even if it's this invisible little piece of code doing it on a website, which is what I used to do. We're not going to talk about how long ago because that's going to make me older. It was before social media was doing it because they wanted our data. But in all seriousness, what we mean is we're not going to have that ability to track with a little piece of code unless the person opts in to do so. I'm not going to be able to have the same kind of easy mechanisms. I'm going to need to rely on other tools and methodologies to be able to get us there.
So first of all, Marketing Smarts listeners, rewind and just listen to that again. By the way, if we have a whole lot of listeners listen to this episode, there'll probably be less people that will actually accept the cookies. Because for the first time in my life, I was like, oh my God, that's creepy. I would be like, what is going on right now? And you don't really think about it that way unless you're having the conversation that we're having today of like, there is this thing tracking you with a notepad and knows everything. So here's what's fun for me as I start to think about the fact of if this is the case of what's been happening and where we're going and privacy, it's not going backwards. It's only going to go forwards. How the heck can marketers navigate this in a way that they can still do the things that they need to do? Because like you said earlier, you might need that product. And so as a marketer, like what are some key elements that we have to be thinking about or leaning into as we go forward and navigate this? They didn't approve it. They did approve it. It doesn't exist. We don't have that anymore. When people convert on our site, talk me through that whole mental mess that happens in my brain.
Well, there's a variety of different options that exist, and we only have a little bit of time, so we can cover some of the big ones. I think the biggest one that's been talked about for years is first-party data, which companies have already been doing. And the angle that I really want to help organizations focus on is how to get accurate first-party data and how to really build the relationship. I recently was at, and this happens almost always for coffee shops, not only coffee shops. I know it happens at other places too. Thank you so much for stopping by. Here's your receipt. And then it's the first email. Most recently, I think it was the third email, but in like a week time period, we'd like to have your birthday to give you a birthday coupon. Well, I don't know about you, but typically I don't walk around with a sign that says, hi, here's my birthday. Give me free coffee or 10% off. I want free coffee. That sounds great. But I don't know who you are and what you're going to do with that information yet. And that's just a example. It's almost the how soon is too soon to ask all the information. And especially in a digital situation where you don't see the person, you have to build a relationship with that person on the other side. Depending on what you're selling is going to determine the right cadence for how that relationship is going to get built, how soon you can ask whichever questions are important for you. What often happens is you're going to ask too many questions too soon And maybe I'll answer your birthday question because I like my free coffee and I'm going to give you the wrong birthday. Now, let's say I give you wrong information. You go try and append it with something else and you're going to kind of get a mess. But what if it's a different question? How many people listening here have ever answered the question, how much you make, what your household income is? And you pick either the I prefer not to answer or you just pick any category that sounds lovely, but you don't give accurate information. Well, now all the marketers listening are using the wrong information. So I feel like when it comes to first party data, the very first piece that people are kind of missing is realizing you want to build the relationship on trust for me to give you more data so that you can use those analytics more effectively to send me the right messaging so then I convert more. We can pause there for a second, see if you have any thoughts for me.
Tactical sessions, inspirational keynotes, off-the-clock antics, and let's not forget about immeasurable connections. What am I talking about? The B2B Forum, of course. For more than 15 years, the B2B Forum has been the conference where today's leading B2B marketers gather for insights, networking, and laughs. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's never too early to plan for success. Join us in 2023 in October for inspiration from B2B marketing experts, and I mean those marketers who walk the walk and know how to talk the talk in a way that you can understand. Get access to real-world actionable insights on the tactics and tools that work today and strategies that stand the test of time. When you say, well, on October 4th, you can join us for the B2B Forum full-day workshop for all access attendees. And on the 5th and 6th, well, spectacular conference shenanigans. That's right. If you head over to the B2B Forum website right now, you can sign up to join us October 4th through the 6th for some amazing education. And guess what? I'll see you next year at the B2B Forum. That's right. I'll be there. Will you?
Yeah, I do. First of all, that was a great tease. So you convert more, and I wanted to lean in like, and then I was like, crap, I wanted to finish that. So don't forget that convert more, because I think that might even be part of where my brain is going, because you're talking about trust, and I hear all the things that you're saying. And the question I want to ask you is way off the beaten path, by the way, and it's how important is patience moving forward to marketers and what they're actually trying to achieve?
That's a very unique question. I think it's incredibly important. And part of the challenge is I think executives who are relying on marketers want immediate results because we've been trained to live in this world of immediate action. No one wants to wait or be patient. I can do everything I ever wanted to on a phone. In this new world, not everything's always going to be immediate. It's about building relationships. And for some products, it's going to be immediate. And for some products, it's not. If you're in a B2B environment, that could be a long sale. If you're selling a home, you don't typically buy homes every day, right? That's a long tail relationship. In the car industry, anywhere from 3 to 7 years is kind of the typical turn, whether you're on a lease or you're buying. If it's a shirt, well, depends on how often I want to buy a shirt and what demographic I'm in. Some of the other things to think about are where do you have phases that are natural phases and you can move upstream? Take someone selling anything in the kids market. One of my favorite examples, and I wrote a book and I use this one there, is furniture. There's an organization, I bought something, and they still send me the nursery emails. I don't want the nursery emails. They can probably figure out the first time I bought was 10 years ago. That child is no longer in a crib, and I don't have the opportunity to change it. It's either nursery or all kids. There's no in between. I want to give you more data. Please, company, let me give you better data so you can give me more accurate emails. And then what happens? Two things. The flip side to the first party data. Marketers, think about how hard it is for you to get me on your list, to get me to give you data. Then I give it to you. You send me these stinky emails. My option is either unsubscribe from all or keep getting these annoying emails. There hasn't been the right preference center, which is another place for, in my mind, to save the unsubscribe and give you more information. Because I might not want what you're giving me, but I still like you. Just let me decide what it is I want to hear from you.
It's so interesting. My mind is going like 1,000 miles an hour right now, because one of the things that I deal with almost on a daily basis with folks that we help is email preferences and people being able to have. And I was like, oh my God, are we thinking about the way that we let people pick where they are in their relationship, their life cycle, whatever you want to call it, with the way that they would like us to communicate with them? Are we doing it all wrong? When I actually heard you say that. And so I'm like, I'm doing a podcast. I can't go down this funnel. Like, let me go. So here's the thing. I want to get back to those conversions. You were like, to convert more. And I want to know where you're going to go with that. But I also want to layer on, if it is part of it, maybe it's not, but where my brain goes is, if I need to get more valuable data, if it is about being patient, if it is going back to what I'll call old school trust, handshake, we really know each other, how important is it to have like a lead conversion strategy that is based off of it's handing off to something else that somebody might actually want to engage with?
I think it's a combination of those things. At the end of the day, marketers have a job, which is to sell stuff, right? That's what the company is here for, is to sell whatever product or service is here. And the marketing is all about, you're going to have brand awareness, you're going to have very specific direct messaging, you're going to have very tactical campaigns, and there's room and a place for all of those different kinds of activities. If we're talking about this idea of first-party data and how I'm going to get a message to you, depending on that kind of product and service is going to determine how long it takes for someone to convert. Everyone's typical conversion time is going to be different. Well, whenever it is that's the accurate time for you, you want my message to not make me think, wait, why did I get this message? Talking about email marketing, can't tell you how many people are getting on email lists, or they've gathered a bunch of data, they bought a list, or they're people that they haven't emailed in a long time and they want to email them. That's not going to convert well, because I'm going to have my very official term, scratch your head test. We don't want people to have the scratch your head test, because then they go down the unsubscribe, then you have to have your preference center that you just talked about setting up. Instead, we want them to feel like, oh my gosh, I have to have this. That's what copywriters are doing, or AI tools that then copywriters are reviewing now. Whatever version of that. But the copy has to convert. It has to be, this is the most amazing thing. It's going to solve my problem, or I just have to have this. I'm going to convert. Well, wouldn't it be amazing if you had the right data to get the right people to convert on the right products? Cookies helped us in one avenue try and get better targeting, which is where when you said, you know, are we going back to old school? I feel like it's better. We do have the ability to have better data to be able to segment your audience in a manner that we didn't before digital was here. Because digital's kind of been abused, you know, we have to backtrack and change things. The ability to have that first party data means we can be very specific and be able to convert people potentially more quickly, because you can shorten the funnel. Also potentially shorten the trust window based on the kind of data that you're able to get. But if you push too quickly, then you're going to mess the whole thing up.
Yeah, there's two things I love in that section, by the way. I love the ninja throat punch to AI-assisted writing tools that you just threw in there. And then I love when I heard you say, marketers are here to sell stuff. And it's so true. If you are, dare I say, modern marketer, understanding that you have to be generating revenue, there has to be a direct line to ROI. It makes it so that you have more job stability and security, because you're not just like something that is absorbing money out of the budget. So to hear you say marketers are here to sell stuff, I absolutely love that. You know, time flies when we're having fun, and I am having fun with this episode, but let's keep chugging along, because I want to kind of drive into, what are some of the potholes, aka some of the hurdles that B2B marketers, the marketing smarts listeners might run into? Jody, is there things 1, 2, 3 that you'd be like, hey, ladies and gentlemen, just watch out for this?
That is a very unique question as well. You have lots of really great, unique questions, George. You know, I think in terms of potholes, it's kind of thinking that any of the cool technologies that are being sold to you are going to solve all of it. Take your CMP flavor of the month, or, you know, a CRM that's on steroids, or the idea of a clean room. And one of the other ideas that I wanted to bring up was a clean room, because we talked a lot about first party data and some of the other ways that companies can navigate in a cookieless era is going to be clean room. The technologies are only going to work as well as the data is here. And if you have really good solid data that you can put into a clean room or that you can use in a CDP, then those tools will be really beneficial. If you're kind of hoping it's going to be magic with the little fairy wands, then it's not going to be. And I think people who don't do the homework, don't really understand the technology as well and what it can do for them, or don't understand how it can work and there's a privacy impact that they didn't appreciate. For example, in a clean room, you want to make sure the data that you're sharing is in line with your own privacy notice and is in line with your own contracts that you have. Or you could create a big privacy snafu and then you get to the legal team and they tell you, no, you can't do this. So you want to avoid those kinds of things and build them all up front. So those would be, I think, some of the big pitfalls that I see B2B people have.
So let's pump the brakes for a hot second. The folks that are listening that heard you say clean room and are like, huh? What is that? Can you just share what a clean room is if they have it and don't know it, if they might not have it? Like, just wax poetic on that for a couple hot minutes.
Clean room, at its simplest, is a organization that allows different companies to bring data there and share it without the personal information actually going to the other party. So, George, let's say you're company A, I'm company B. We want to share our information together, but I don't really want you to actually have my data. I just want to be able to glean some of the benefits of it. And the same is true on my side. Well, we would go to clean room company, put the data in there, and that company is the one that does all the matchy-matchy. And we say, oh, well, I really want to run a campaign over here. We facilitate that through that clean room to be able to do it. So we get the benefit of merging data in a more privacy-friendly way. And that allows all the benefits that you would have of trying to merge data, but in a more privacy happy way.
Super dope. All right. Thank you for hitting that so that the listeners understand kind of that's even a thing that they could do or they have been doing. If they've been doing it, they probably understood the term. But I digress. So one of the things I like to do is kind of look at both sides of the coin. So I asked you about potholes. I asked you about hurdles. So what does success look like? How do we know as an organization or as a group of B2B marketers inside of an organization that we're navigating a world minus cookies, but we've reached marketing nirvana in said scenario? What does that look like?
We've been talking about segments for years. The idea of segmenting your audience, count-based marketing, those are not new terms. Success, though, is where you get it right. And it goes back to the data. You know, if we kind of start with how we got here, in a cookie universe, we didn't have to necessarily, you could rely on your own data, but you also didn't necessarily have to. And there are some other new kind of cookie tools coming out. They're server to server that will allow you to do things more on your side. So we'll still allow for some of that targeting. But if I go with the idea of segmentation, the more data you have, the better your own CRM will be, the better you can leverage a CDP, the better you can use a clean room, the better you can use any of the new tools and technology that will be here. And then that's where you get that conversion again. The companies that I see that are successful have a clean, no pun intended, but have a clean data set. In other words, it's not messy with, well, I have data in this database and I have data over in that database, but they don't actually sync to each other. I've seen situations where they have preference centers. Jody wants option A and B, but it didn't sync properly to the other tools and systems. Well, then that's not really clean data, because when you as a marketer are relying on either of those systems, the data didn't go back and forth the way it was supposed to. So success actually kind of starts with a clean data environment. And I don't mean to say like clean data warehouse, but just getting all your data in order is honestly one of the first places. Then you can put on top of it all of the other cool tools, and then you can leverage all of the segments doing so properly.
I love the conversation of data hygiene. Wow, let's go. I love that conversation. I would have that on a daily basis because it helps us do the right things with what we're trying to do inside of marketing. So I usually have a final question. I'm going to ask you that final question, but I vaguely remember you saying something earlier in the podcast episode that you wrote a book. How about you tell me and the listeners a little bit more about said book and why they might be interested in it?
I would love to. Thank you. Book is called Data Reimagined, Building Trust One Bite at a Time. And it was written for people like all of you listening, and it is for the business professional who is not a privacy and security expert, but needs to understand the universe of privacy, why it matters. Maybe you listening do understand it, but actually your executive team isn't completely getting it, because a lot of times it's marketers who come and say, I really need this cookie banner thing or this privacy notice. Help me figure it out. And we start there and I say, well, but there's all these other areas that you have to pay attention to. What we do is we use real stories. We've protected the innocent, but they're all real stories that we have encountered and experienced. And we use humor throughout to try and make a topic that might not be at the top of everyone's list, except for mine, on privacy and security, and explain it in a manner that makes everyone go, oh, I can see how that is really valuable. I can see how building trust with customers makes some sense. That is our book.
Love it. Thanks for sharing that. Jody, this has been absolutely amazing. I have learned some stuff. I'm sure that the Marketing Smarts listeners have learned a few things along the way as well. Hopefully they have the rewind button handy and a notepad, a tablet, or some chalk for their wall, whatever they need to move forward in the right way. My last question for you, because we're all on a journey and you've been on a journey as far as privacy and GDPR and all the things that are coming from those directions. What are some words of wisdom based on that journey? What would you want to share with the Marketing Smarts listeners? And again, it could be about a cookie-less future. It could be about building trust. Heck, I'll even open up to it could be life itself. What words of wisdom do you want to leave us with?
I think as we embark, today we're talking about cookieless, and there's new tools that'll come out, and then those tools will continue to change. We have AI that's going to continue to change the universe. What I would offer is to understand your customer and put the customer first and include other people and really realize that the journey that you're on is to help explain to your customers why they should be buying XYZ. Think about that relationship and don't forget that it really is all about trust and the end goal of building a lifelong relationship with that customer or company, and to really ask for help.
So, Marketing Smarts listeners, did you take lots of notes? I have to ask, what is your hashtag one thing? Your number one execution opportunity after this podcast. Make sure you reach out and let us know in my inbox or on Twitter using the hashtag MPB2B. Also, I have to ask, are you a free member of the Marketing Profs community yet? If not, head over to mprofs.com/MP today. You won't regret the additional B2B marketing education you'll be adding to your life. Hey, listeners, we'd like it if you could leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. But we'd love it if you'd share this episode with a coworker or friend. Until we meet in the next episode of the Marketing Smarts podcast, where we talk with Adrian Marino about how to become the go-to expert in your niche, which way do you say it? Let me know. I hope you do just a couple of things. One, reach out and let us know what conversation you'd like to listen into next. Two, focus on getting 1% better at your craft each and every day. And finally, remember to be a happy, helpful, humble B2B marketing human. And we'll see you in the next episode of the Marketing Smarts Podcast.